I'm Nick Harvey Doyle, an Anawan man from the northern tablelands of New South Wales. The Yarn podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung, and Bunurong people. We'd like to acknowledge First Nations people as the first storytellers. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
From the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, this is The Yarn. I'm Elliot Rodriguez. Every day, our brains take cognitive shortcuts. Our limited time and attention make it easy to fall back on familiar biases. Among the most deeply ingrained is the assumption that natural always means healthier. This week, we're interrogating this idea with stories about natural and synthetic remedies. It's the fourth episode of Not Natural, a series about the tension between the natural and the artificial. These stories were produced for the Science Gallery's new exhibition, Not Natural. It's open now and includes a listening station where you can hear work from our students. First up, a story that proves laughter may be the best medicine, even if it's fake. Harriet Thorpe reports on health benefits of laughing yoga.
Laughter has time again proven numerous health benefits, yet science shows that we, as adults, laugh less as we grow older. The committed members of the Moonee Ponds Laughter Yoga Club are all about challenging this idea and laughing their way to a happier, healthier life. The group meets every Friday morning at 10 a.m. in Queen's Park in Moonee Ponds. I had the opportunity to attend two of these classes run by Venetia George and met the 10 or so regular attendants and learned to be a child again. Venetia trained in healing and massage and now runs these classes to improve people's well-being. When I spoke to Venetia about her experience with the laughter yoga, she reflected on the community of regular attendees.
My name is Venetia. I am the laughter leader. Most of the people come because for community reasons. They like to engage with others because during COVID, it's been quite tough for people. So a lot of times it's when people are lonely, there's anxiety, depression, things like that.
As yoga is a calm activity and laughing seems uncontrollable, I was intrigued at how the two could mix. There's nothing better than the feeling after you've laughed wildly for minutes. But unnatural? Forced laughter often brings up recollections of pity laughing at unfunny dad jokes or to fill in an awkward silence. But for the Moonee Ponds Laughter Yoga Club, this unprompted laughter provides many benefits that keeps members coming back for upwards of 5 years.
There's physical benefits, spiritual benefits, the mental health benefits and the emotional benefits. So it helps whole well-being actually.
The members of the class are usually older, so the yoga component helps with balance, coordination and general mobility. Venetia also plays dance tunes for the class to create a positive atmosphere and encourage the group members to dance. At the start of each session, Venetia asks the group to call out the age of the people they wish to enact. People yell 4, 5, 3.
Remember, we're a little bit down. We don't care what anybody's thinking.
The key to the laughter yoga is to forget your embarrassment and ignore what casual park goers and their dogs may think.
Yeah, just let go of inhibition. Let your inner child come out because our inner child's the one that's got the joy, and sometimes we lose our joy during life. Yeah, so it brings a lightness to the heart, to the spirit.
Often, the laughter starts as forced, but by the end, everyone is smiling and all insecurities vanished.
That was Harriet Thorpe. Next, the weight loss trend allegedly based on the natural diets of our ancient ancestors. Ruby Clayton Dowling reports.
Keto, a controversial diet that completely rearranges the typical balance of macronutrients consumed by humans, aiming for an extremely high fat and low carb intake. The ketogenic diet utilizes the evolutionary process of ketosis developed to help humans survive famine by forcing our bodies to break down fat for fuel in the absence of glucose. The diet itself was initially conceived in the 1920s as a treatment for epilepsy. So why did it suddenly resurrect in the 2010s with the promise of quick and effective weight loss? I spoke to Gemma O'Hanlon, a Heart Foundation dietitian and vice president of Dietitians Australia, about her thoughts on the keto diet.
Look, the keto diet is something that I wouldn't recommend to most Australians because it is really challenging to actually stick to a very high fat, very low carbohydrate diet. And there's a number of side effects as well, including having bad breath, feeling quite tired and lethargic, not having much energy because you're not consuming those carbohydrate-rich foods.
In addition to what we typically think of as containing carbohydrates, many individuals on the keto diet avoid fruits like bananas and apples, as well as vegetables that grow below ground.
When it comes to fruit and vegetables, these are a key component of a healthy diet, and it's quite concerning to me that people might be choosing to cut out these foods.
When I asked Gemma if she believed that the keto diet or intentionally inducing ketosis was unnatural, she immediately said yes.
Because it's depriving the body of carbohydrates, which are the number one fuel source for the brain. So when we don't consume carbohydrates, our brain is impacted and our muscles are impacted as well.
Jonathan Benici, however, who's been on the keto diet for over 3 years, argues quite the opposite.
Humans were evolved 2.5 million years ago. Processed foods and sugars have only been around for the past 150 years. So humanity lived in a state of ketosis for over 2 million years. So I'd argue the fact that the processed sugars are not the natural diet of humans.
Jonathan, who says he lost 30 kilograms in his first 3 months on the diet, believes that carbohydrates are what may negatively impact brain function rather than a lack of them, as Gemma argues.
I feel stronger, healthier. I don't have sugar crashes, and I think the sugar crashes kind of impact your mental abilities as well.
Ultimately, it is evident that deliberately putting one's body into a state of ketosis to induce weight loss goes against not only the mainstream, but what is natural. Whether what is against the norm and unnatural, however, is wrong or unhealthy for everybody is still up for debate.
That was Ruby Clayton Dowlin. Next, Holly Larkspur reports on an artificial pump that can save the lives of children with heart failure.
Heart failure. This is a complication that many of us associate with older people. But what about in children?
Perhaps one in 500 children would suffer from a heart complication?
I don't know, maybe one in every 300 to 400 children?
Maybe one in every 200 children.
To many people's surprise, one in every 100 children in Australia suffer from some kind of heart complication.
Heart failure is one kind of complication that clinicians deal with on an everyday basis.
This is Jade Cosford.
Jade is an honours student at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute with the Cardiac Surgery and Anesthesiology Departments at the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne. Jade's research project, the outcomes of children supported by the Berlin Heart Extracorporeal Ventricular Assist System, assesses the viability of the Berlin Heart System on smaller children who are traditionally not considered for this method of treatment. Here is Jade to discuss her research.
Heart transplantation is the gold standard treatment. To keep these kids alive until a suitable donor heart becomes available, we will usually put them on mechanical circulatory support, which is where the focus of my research, the Berlin Heart, comes in. The Berlin Heart has dramatically decreased waiting list mortality and morbidity over the past 10 years. However, it still doesn't have great outcomes in children under 10 kilograms, and we're not quite sure why at the moment. So that's the focus of my research, looking at whether there is a specific time or a specific way in which the Berlin Heart should be implanted to maximise survival in these small children until a suitable donor heart becomes available.
The Berlin Heart implantation is a relatively new and complex technology now available in the medical industry. So I'll get Jade to describe it.
The Berlin Heart system works by utilising an external pump which sits
external to the child's body and then attaches to the kid's heart through a system of silicone tubes. And then the whole system then mechanically pumps blood around the child's body to replace their failing heart until a suitable heart transplant can be achieved.
Jade will finalise her research towards the end of this year, contributing to the expanding scholarship regarding the viability of the Berlin Heart System. But more importantly,
our work will impact surgical management of these kids for quite a while in the future, and being in the children's hospital almost every day and seeing the massive impact that heart failure has on these kids and their families, it's a really big honour to be doing this work and hopefully impacting the lives and the health of these children for a while to come.
That was Holly Larkspur. It's among the most prescribed medications on earth, but many believe its side effects shouldn't be considered normal. In our final story, Megan Hansen reports on hormonal birth control.
All medicines can have side effects. Sometimes they are serious, most of the time they are not. If you notice any of the following side effects and they worry you, tell your doctor or pharmacist. Nausea, stomach pain, changes in weight, headache, including migraines.
My name is Hannah, and I was on the pill for, I want to say 3 or 4 years.
My name is Claire. I have been offered it by several different doctors, and I refuse to go on the pill.
My name is Maddie Valentine, and I've never been on the pill before. I have been offered it for multiple different reasons.
Jaundice, you cough up blood, or unexplained vaginal bleeding.
What scares me about the pill? Probably the extremely long list of side effects.
They give you this massive pamphlet of all the side effects, and it's like, you could die. It's probably not going to happen, but you could die if you take this.
Anything with this many side effects is not natural. It shouldn't be considered as a solution.
I definitely got like a few side effects. I gained weight. I got some mental health side effects on it.
It's a systemic multi-organ process that is being impacted by the pill. They've just decided that that's good enough.
Just got a solution. They're like, oh, it fits enough that we're gonna run with it because we don't have the resources and the energy. And also that we don't prioritize this enough to research it more.
Women's hormones and the difference between, you know, male and female physiology has been severely under-focused on in science, and especially in the development of medications. I said this before, the solution to travelling at light speed could be within a woman's uterus, and men would never find it because they would never think to look there or investigate anything in regards to the female body whatsoever.
I can see a future in which there is more research put into controlling different menstrual cycles, but I also think what's needed is a societal change. There's such a stigma of kind of like, if you're on the pill, it's because you're promiscuous, it's because you have sex with a lot of people.
There's this thing where you have to like disclaim to people, oh, I'm on the pill, but not because I'm sexually active, it's because I have acne, or it's because I have bad period pains.
There's not that space for people to talk about the different reasons for being on the pill, so you're just kind of assumed to be, for want of a better word, a slut.
There should be no stigma around me saying, oh yeah, I'm on medication. It's medication that is helping me with an aspect of my life.
If you're on it for contraceptive reasons, that shows a level of maturity which we often see forced upon young women, which we don't see forced upon young men.
That was Megan Hansen. A massive thank you to producers Harriet Thorpe, Ruby Clayton Dowling, Holly Larkspur, and Megan Hansen. The Yarn is from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. It's produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This episode was written and produced by Thomas Phillips. Our executive producer is Louisa Lim, and I'm Elliot Rodriguez. See you next week.